This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This episode of the KMP Show is brought to you by Amazon. Go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon right now. Bookmark the click-through link. That way, anytime you buy anything from Amazon, you'll be helping out the KMP Show as well as the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. So go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon right now. Bookmark the click-through link and help out the show. We thank you. Welcome back, everybody, to the KMP Show, episode number 32. My name is Jonathan Playtech, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Mr. Rich Craich.
Hello. How's it going? How's it going?
It's going good. You know what? We're back from the new year. We're back off hiatus. That's how I treated it.
Yeah, the hiatus new year. For the there new was a bunch of stuff going on. Like we had, of course, for people that follow us or know about Voices of Wrestling, busy. Crazy year at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, you're doing an audiobook.
Yeah, we did. We got the ebook. We got Wrestle Kingdom's the big deal. Wrestle Kingdom on the 4th. We got right now. We're going through our match of the year stuff right now. So there's just a ton that happens in January, but then it kind of dies down, and then like February, March, and April is just the slogs of winter and like nothing. And then you got the holidays and stuff like that too. I mean, we got one show in there, I think, in between Christmas and New Year. But we should be back on a more consistent thing. It's all on me. It's all my fault, and I apologize.
Yes, blame it on him.
It's absolutely true. No, you're absolutely correct.
At Voices Wrestling on Twitter, you can follow the show at KANDP Show on Twitter, and you can follow me at John's Voices.
So to make up for that, though, we're going to talk about every single topic that we had in mind for the last 4 weeks. So, week one like NFL playoffs, John, who you got?
I like
the Texans a lot, man. Brock Osweiler is definitely going to... Because everyone's talking about Brock Osweiler not being good, and he's going to say, you know what? No.
Bum. He's a bum.
I'm good, guys. You didn't sign me for nothing. I'm Brock Osweiler, damn it.
I've never seen, for such a big idiot, he throws like Chad Pennington, for the love of God.
Yeah.
Like, if you're that big, you have to throw hard. You have to have an arm. Like, he's six foot seven, but
he's huge.
But he throws like Vince Young. He throws like three quarters.
You don't want that. Ideally, you don't want to. If in football camp for young kids that are listening, Vince Young, not the guy you want to learn from or try to throw or emulate.
Yeah, that, you know, great in college, that USC game was a thing, man. I remember watching
he
that.
He had like, and that's the thing that was so funny about him is like, you look at his college career and it was still really good. And this is kind of like a hindsight 2020 thing with him, but like, that one game made everybody just go nuts. Like, every single person in the world, even if they were like, well, he throws kind of weird, and his numbers are good, but they're not like that. They were like, oh my God, look at that performance. That we can have that. And nobody wanted to not have that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be the team that didn't draft Vince Young. And it's like, well, how do you not draft Vince Young? Look at what he can do. And it's like, we know. And that's what makes people do such dumb things. Like, the Brock Osweiler signing is like, this guy was not good for a while. He sat on the bench, did nothing under Peyton Manning. Had like 5 or 6 good games on a team that won the Super Bowl in spite of their quarterback. Right? Like, we know that. They won a Super Bowl. Right.
He was so bad. He turned so bad for the Broncos that season that when Peyton Manning was benched for sucking, they brought in Brock Osweiler, who then sucked so bad they had to bench him and bring back Peyton Manning, who then just like kind of was there for Von Miller to win the Super Bowl for him. But I don't understand, and you know, that's a great point you bring up, Vince Young. They might do that again. Some NFL team, hopefully not the Bears, do that with Deshaun Watson.
He's at that. He skipped the Senior Bowl now. He's basically like, nope, I'm good. Like, this is the last thing you need. The lasting memory of me is that
last
game.
Last thing on
Boom.
Tape. Last thing on tape.
Have fun. Not going to the Senior Bowl. Not doing any workouts. You saw what I can do. Please pay me now. Thank you. So.
And you know what? What a statement it was, but I'm still just not sold on him as an NFL prospect. And I don't know what it is. I don't know.
It's a solid arm, but yeah, I wonder. I'm
the interceptions in college scare me.
Yeah, it doesn't really know where it's going, really, ever.
Tendency to miss high, and when you miss high, you get intercepted. And I don't know. I'd have to see some more of the measurables from the combine, but. I don't know what it is that I don't like. I just don't like it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, he's going to be a crop, and we've talked about this one of our shows that we did at the beginning of the NFL season. And I guess it'll play into what we're going to talk about here with one of the NFL games. But it's just, there's a whole new crop of these quarterbacks coming in, and it's like, there's a guy like a Deshaun Watson where you don't know, but like the idea is like, I think we still, and NFL coaches still, and NFL, there's this mindset of what an NFL quarterback has to do and what they have to run and what they, you know, all that sort of thing. And Watson probably isn't going to fit into that hole, and he's not going to fit into what you want him to do. But it's a matter of like, okay, if we draft this guy, you know, in the top five, like, do we have to alter what we do? If this guy is so important to us that we're going to draft him in the top five, maybe we can't just expect him to go under center and do this sort of thing and do and it. So it'll be really interesting to see what kind of happens. But we will talk about it in a little bit. There was a team that kind of said, no, we're going to ride and die with our rookies and see where it takes us. And it actually took them pretty far.
And it worked out. It worked out despite the director of the broadcast definitely trying to stir up a little bit with Joe Buck. They were cutting to Tony Romo a lot when it wasn't really necessary, I think. But we've got some we have breaking news I think we got to get to first. It's Hall of Fame baseball, Hall of Fame induction season. The results were revealed just this evening, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about. This is the class of 2017, isn't it?
Correct, yes, yeah. Because they'll be inducted. Correct? Yeah, they'll be inducted in July, I believe, or July or August. I forgot when it is exactly, but
Jeff Bagwell, Tim Raines,
finally,
and Ivan Rodriguez making it all the way. Buff Bagwell, baby, finally getting in. This is his seventh year on the ballot. Tim Raines' last year on the ballot, his 10th. You only get 10 years now. And Pudge, a first ballot Hall of Famer, which I don't really have a problem with at all. Pudge going first, right?
I mean, his numbers are crazy for a catcher. Of course, even in that era, too, you still look at him, and it's just nuts. Yeah, his peak was super high, and yeah, he actually hung on for a little bit, too. I mean, some of the, like, on base isn't great for him, but the average and the slugging and doing it all from a catcher's position and being a damn good catcher, too. Like, that's the other thing about him, too, is it wasn't like he was just one of those, he's not like a Piazza guy where it's like, yeah, I play catcher, but come on. Like,
I'm just here to hit diggers.
I'm just going to hit the digger. Don't care about me, like, you know, letting balls run through my leg, you know, don't worry about that. But Pudge would fucking throw you out, man. Like, you couldn't steal bases on that guy. So, like, you have that combined with being a good hitter, getting 300 plus home runs, you know, hitting for a good average, being a feared hitter from the catcher's position. That's impressive. And maybe the last breed of guys that are going to be that way as well, because now we see it so often where guys just don't want to let teams don't want to let catchers stay at catcher ever,
right,
for the fear that, like, you're going to turn into Joe Mauer. Like, case in point, Joe Mauer. It's like, no. Yep. A few more years, buddy, play catcher, then we'll move you. And it's like, oh god, a few years too late, you're awful, your legs are done now. Like,
And he wanted to play catcher too. He didn't want to move for the longest time
because he was good at it too. And it's like, and I know that it's tough because it's like, oh man, he's like the best catcher in baseball. Like, why would he move him to first base and have him maybe be, you know, not quite as good as a first baseman? Well, here's what it is. Now you got, you know, Joe Mauer for the next 7 years as like a mediocre first baseman. Now it's like, well, damn, like that's, or mediocre DH. Yeah, he can't even run anymore. Yeah.
No, he can't run. And that power never really developed.
No, it was there that 1 year and then it kind of went away. So yeah, Pudge may be that last of that breed of like just full on like good ass hitter at catcher. You know, there's some that are still out here right now. They're still hanging around, but like a guy that can go through the entire system and be that way. And just the blend of being a good defensive and a good hitting catcher. You just don't see that very often.
No. Especially now with it, it's become, the catching position has become so specialized with the pitch, the emphasis on pitch framing and blocking and being able to manage a game. You've got teams now that are sort of going the other way, whereas there was a run on catchers for a while where, you know, how good are you at offense? We don't really care about catching defense. You know, catching doesn't matter, or defense doesn't matter. But now there's been a renaissance of sorts where now it's, okay, well, you know, you can OBP 290. If you can pitch frame, because we think that that pitch frame is that much.
Well, you
more
look
valuable.
At I just fired this up. Here's the top five catchers in pitch framing per StatCorner.com. So you got tell me how many of these guys are like bona fide good hitters.
All right.
So you got Buster Posey. Yes, he is.
Yes,
you got one. Yep. Yes, Monty Grandal.
I'm not that familiar.
Yeah, he's not really, but
not good.
Yeah, he's fine. He's okay, but he's not like, I wouldn't consider him like a feared hitter. You know what I mean?
Right.
Miguel Montero.
He's pretty terrible.
Tyler Flowers.
Oh.
And Jason Castro from the Astros. He's not. I can clue you in right there. He is not a good hitter. I mean, you got to go down. I mean, you got like Yadier Molina, who's, you know, I think seventh, and he's not really a good hitter anymore. You got to go real far down to find any guy. You know, Jonathan Lucroy, maybe, you know, and he's like, we're talking like 15th now at this point.
Did they still throw Mike Napoli behind the plate every once in a while?
Less so every single year. I think I forgot. He barely played this year.
Okay.
But I mean, that's right there. I mean, none of those guys. So like, you're absolutely correct that it hasn't, for a while there was that we'll get a really good hitter at catcher. We'll get like, you know, a good power hitter. And I think a lot of that was a Piazza and a Pudge, you know, that generation spawning, you know, good hitting catchers. We're back to like the old days too, where it's just like, this guy just sucks. We don't care, because they affect the game so much on the defensive end and so much on, you know, pitch framing and all that sort of stuff. And the, you know, chopping down the run game and all that sort of stuff and calling games and all that. So you just don't really need a guy to be, you'd rather your good hitters be at every other position and that guy be the specialized one. You know, it's
right. Once you, now that people have learned that that's a place where you can find a different way to be valuable instead of just mashing the ball, then okay, well then now that's where we can stick a guy who,
right.
Now we can deal with somebody who doesn't, you know, swing the lumber all that well. Wow. Tyler Flowers. I never really thought of him as a proficient pitch framer.
Yeah, he always was. But he's just such a bad hitter though.
Wasn't when he was a prospect, wasn't that his thing where he was thought of to be a power hitting prospect?
It was.
He was thought of as an offensive catching prospect, but then that just never materialized.
No, yeah.
And then his defense.
Yeah, now he's Mr. Framer, so that's good for him. But yeah.
Well, you know what? Hey, if you can have the career arc of AJ Pierzynski, where you're in the league for
look at Francisco Cervelli. I mean, that guy's created a. I mean,
oh, that's right.
Thank God, if he was 5 years earlier in the league, he'd be out already. But he came around at a time and he was almost out of the league until the Pirates realized, oh, geez, this guy's a really good pitch framer, and got him pretty much out of obscurity. And he's been there now for 5-6 years or whatever and here he is. He's number 7 on the list, or number 6 rather, on the list of top pitch framers. And he's been up there for years as well. I mean, that's a guy who's made a complete second generation. Yeah. I mean, that guy should have been out of the league years ago. He's just not a very good hitter at all. So that's nice. It's a nice little career to make.
Did Gary Sanchez make that list?
Oh, boy. I don't.
The young surefire Yankees.
But I think he was a decent. I don't know if this is raw number or averages.
Okay.
He's about in the middle of the pack, but I thought he was a good catcher from everything I read or remembered, that he actually did have a pretty good year at catcher. But there again, that's a question that the Yankees will have is if this guy comes back next year and is tearing the cover off the ball, how long do you say, yeah, you should bend over and destroy your knees?
Work those knees,
right?
Son. There you go.
Or do you go, oh man, you're really good
sweat
at hitting.
Sweat out 15 pounds a day in the dead of summer, in dead heat of summer, wearing all that gear, the tools of ignorance.
Yeah, it's how long do you want to do that? Or do you want to be you're a pretty good hitter, buddy? That's the problem. Yep. You could either have the best hitting catcher in the league, and that's great, and it's a great asset. Or you can have, a guy that hangs around then for, 10 more years because he doesn't play catcher every day. So it's really interesting.
Right.
Yeah, poor catchers.
Now, Rich, do you have any problem with Buff?
Buff Bagwell?
Making it?
Nah, I don't. I don't care anymore. And people that listen to KMP might not know our stance. Anybody that's an old 643 Sports listener or, interacts with us, either of us on Twitter, know basically, as far as steroid guys and suspected steroid guys, which Bagwell is absolutely just a suspected one or whatever. I mean,
though he probably very likely.
Oh, I mean, yeah, he absolutely one off season. He's I just lost 30 pounds just cause guys. All right, well, that's fine.
Good job, buddy. Here you go.
Yeah, I'm out of the league now. Bye. Okay, I gotta go. He probably did. There are many guys
that never tested positive, was never linked, was never
subject
of an investigation.
My stance has always been with these guys, and we'll get to it when we talk about the Bonds and Clemens and those sort of guys, is that, as long as the league had no rules in place, as long as there was no testing, as long as nobody was being suspended for it, I can't really go and retroactively say, oh, Barry Bonds took steroids, I think, so he definitely can't. You know what I mean? I can't do that.
Right.
I've never wanted to do that. I've never liked to do that. And I never will do that. If there wasn't any rules in place, then what Bonds and Clemens and Bagwell probably did is no different than what guys probably, aka definitely did, in the 60s and 70s when they were taking amphetamines, and Willie Mays and Pete Rose unabashedly said, yeah, what do you think puts the hustle in Charlie Hustle?
right, I'm taking amphetamines.
Yeah, it's not fucking water, guy. It's not Gatorade, guys.
Plus, I got a dime on this
game. Exactly. So. I really want to win. I really got to win. And we definitely need to win by at least 3 runs, so I'm going to take an extra base just to make sure. But no, it's been well known. Willie Mays has said it time and time again. There was the two coffee pots. There was the one that was coffee, and then there was the other one that had the greenies. And, it was common knowledge. Everybody knew that. That's no different, really. It's not. And again, just like amphetamines weren't a magic elixir, steroids weren't a magic elixir that immediately made you great. Yeah, there were definitely benefits to taking steroids, and I'm definitely glad the league has decided to clean it up a little bit.
Yeah, it was getting a little much.
Guys were gargantuan men. Yeah, and that's. And then here's the problem again, and that's why I was really happy to see that, and we'll talk about this here in a little bit, is then the today's game committee, that new committee that is formed to kind of vote guys of the current era, just let Bud Selig waltz right in. And once you do that, and it was funny to see all these jumps, is that every voter went, fuck you, Barry Bonds is a Hall of Famer. Roger Clemens, if Bud Selig and Tony La Russa and all these guys can kind of waltz right in, go, hey, steroids are bad, woo, yeah, no, thank you. if those
steroids
guys
are bad, but the billions of dollars are great.
Yeah, my success that was dependent almost entirely on steroids. Oh, hey, like you can't. Now you've basically said, okay, once you let Bud Selig waltz in there, there's no argument for not voting Barry Bonds. There's no, because that's a guy who let it happen. So if you want to get mad at the players for doing it, that's fine. But if you're going to let the guy who let it happen in,
right,
then I'm sorry, these guys go in too. And my stance has always been for like guys like Amanda Ramirez, I do have trouble with him because he did test positive and was suspended under the rules. So I always have a little issue with him because it's like, now what right. do you, like if now I
see. You see, I can one better though. I said, that doesn't really bother me that much. You know, because it was incentivized in a way, and even though it was against the rules and testing, he tested positive, and I don't know what it is, but it seems to me to I don't want to draw the line at positive test, and I have a problem drawing the line at positive test. But I get people that do. Even with a positive test, even staring at positive test in the face, I say let him in. Because it's about what you did. It's about what you did on the field, and you did it, and you're in. And if you mashed that ball enough, or you threw it hard enough and got guys out enough, to me, you're in. Then the really interesting part is that last year, Bonds and Clemens went respectively 44.3% and 45.2% of the vote. This year, Clemens and Bonds Bonds and Clemens went 54.1% and 58.6% of the vote. So they're going up. And I apologize. I know my board had a little bit of a cutout there. She's old. She's an old girl. And 54.1 and, or 53.8 and 54.1, almost 10 whole percentage points of the vote jumps for Bonds and Clemens over a year's time. That's not bad.
No, they're getting in. I mean, I think now that there's been a whole year where people have realized, oh, well, if Bud Selig's in and all these guys are in, I think right. They're absolutely, I don't know if it's next year, but it looked like it wasn't going to happen, or it looked like it would take a miracle for it to happen, but I don't know that we're that far away from it now, of those guys.
No, they're on their fifth ballot, so they've got five more years, or I guess technically five. They've got five more ballots to get in, and before long, I think it'll change. And there's a lot of turnover. There's a lot of turnover in the BBWAA. They've changed their requirements. You know, they've shuttered a bunch of their, you know, old dead weight guys that haven't covered the game in 35 years who somehow still have a vote. They've gotten rid of all of them, or a lot of them, via rule changes. And so you're getting a lot of new blood, a lot of fresh blood, and a lot more people are willing to be open and transparent about their ballots. There was a great Hall of Fame ballot tracker that a not Mr. Tibbs put together on Excel for people to follow and tracked, and they have data of what this guy did last year, who voted for whom, and who lost votes, and how. And it's been it's going to be really interesting, this paradigm shift, and I think it's just at the right time for guys like Bonds and Clemens and even guys like Manny Ramirez as they go forward through the Hall of Fame candidacy. Now going down the list, Rich, Trevor Hoffman got 74% of the vote. I think he was a guy last year that people thought, okay, maybe not first ballot, but certainly second ballot. Is it a travesty that he didn't get in this year?
I'm always weird about closers, and I don't know that I've yet figured out what my stance is necessarily on them. I guess I'm not on the, because there's the one camp that really punishes, like, oh, you're a closer, so forget it, you're out of here, whatever. To me, it's not that guy's fault that's what the role was that he was put in. You know what I mean? Like, you can only do right. What you do in your role. Yes, ideally, like, closers are mostly just failed starter pitchers or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, in most cases, that's what they actually are. Right. But, like, in that case, I can't punish a guy for doing what his role was, though there is the idea that, like, well, his role was so limited. And when you compare it to these other guys and these other position players and people that do so much things on the field and affect so much part of the game, and then the closer just kind of comes in for his little part and does his thing, and it's so small compared to the gigantic world and the gigantic universe that an entire baseball game is. I have trouble with that, so I can't really reconcile that. I don't know about Hoffman quite yet, and I guess I'm the same way with all the closers right now. He's really great, though, so if, like, your stance is, well, I'm fine with closers, then there's no doubt that he goes in. Like, he's way better than, like, a Lee Smith and these other sort of guys, and a Billy Wagner and guys like that. He absolutely should go in. Me, I don't know. I'm always kind of weird about this. Where do you stand as far as closures go?
You know what? To me, the Hall of Fame is results oriented. It's what you did. And if your role was closing out games, even though it may not be the most efficient way possible, and you did it really well, because Trevor Hoffman didn't really control when he was brought into games. Yeah. He just played what was in front of him. He was given a situation, and his job was to close out games, to finish it up, to get guys out, and carry the team through a sometimes not tumultuous ninth inning. Other times it was. And he could only play the game in front of him, and he did it really well. I don't think it's a travesty he didn't get in this year. I'm happy that Bagwell, Reigns, and Rodriguez got in. If it meant Pudge didn't get in on a first ballot, I would rather have Pudge get in on a first ballot than Hoffman get in on his second, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Because I think there's something special about getting in on the first ballot, and I think Pudge definitely deserved that. He deserved that honor to be remembered as a first ballot Hall of Famer for all the reasons we've listed, and Trevor Hoffman getting in on his third or fourth year versus his second year on the ballot doesn't really move the meters for me. Vlad Guerrero made an interesting showing on his first ballot with 71.7% of the votes, a whole 317 ballots cast with Vladimir Guerrero. He's obviously going to get in. Another guy that was never linked really to steroids or anything of the sort. Despite, you know, known obviously for his head to toe strike zone, but and his, oh my God, his cannon of an arm. That was
the highlights of him. Yeah, look at, just go to YouTube and look up Vladimir Guerrero throw, and just let there's YouTube run for a while. Yeah, there's one where he's at the warning track and it's like one hop to the third baseman, right?
Or
does it even hop, or does it get there on the line?
No, I'm thinking the one. It's a line, and it's a close up. It doesn't do the wide. It doesn't zoom out to show the ball tracking. It tracks the ball on a close up as it leaves his hand. And for a while, I'm thinking, "Holy crap, this is doctored. This has got to be doctored because there's no I have an idea on where the baseball field he was when he threw the ball, and I know about how fast a baseball moves and how long it would take to throw from here to there as a major league player, but I'm watching the video and at close I'm like, this ball should be bouncing. This ball should be on its way down, hitting the ground and bouncing into the guy, into the third baseman, or maybe it was the catcher to whom he's throwing it, and it just didn't. It just stayed up there and went all the way made it all the way to the catcher. Richard, did you make it back? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah, I thought you left. So there we go. We're back all together and everyone's happy.
You're echoing.
Oh, no.
And we're back. We apologize. I apologize for that sometimes. You know what? We've done 32 shows, about an hour each, and that was our first... Was that our first technical snafu with the connection?
We've never had a disconnect ever. Really, I mean, we've had many disconnects in terms of what we're going to talk about and our points and our logic, but technically.
Yes, definite cognitive disconnects when we just say dumb things because we're idiots.
Yeah, but as far as the tech side, no, we've been pretty good. So
no, yeah, you know what? I still think this is the best remote recorded podcast, the best sounding remote recorded podcast. Because I think
we won an award for that. I think it's in the mail.
Yeah,
there's a plaque hanging up somewhere in my house. I forgot where, but. You should have got one too. I don't know. Did you not get yours?
No, it must have been lost in the mail.
I'll send you this one then. Or I'll make a copy.
Okay. But like I was saying, Vlad was weird, odd, in that he was never touched by the allegations that were swirling around pretty much every big name in baseball at the time. I think maybe some people somewhere, they raised an eyebrow at Vladimir Guerrero, but nothing really ever materialized. But he makes a showing with 71% on his first ballot. Is he a surefire Hall of Fame lock in your mind, Rich? Does he deserve to be in Cooperstown?
Yeah, actually going back and looking at a little bit of Vlad's numbers, I didn't like him as much as I kind of thought I would, which was interesting because Vlad's one of my favorite players growing up, and I looked at him and I was like, all right, man, I'm ready for this Vlad thing. Let's go. You know, he should be in there first ballot. And I looked and I went, there's a lot of guys that are probably better than Vlad Guerrero, but there's an optics thing with Vlad too, and you know what I mean? He's such a dynamic player, such a good player that part of me was like, well, numbers wise, if I just stripped everything out, if I just gave you player A, player B, you know, him versus Sheffield or whatever, I give you player A, player B, Vlad and Sheffield, you're going to probably pick Sheffield or whatever, you know, unmasked player or masked player he is. But then you say, okay, well, this one's Vlad and that's Gary Sheff. And you go, oh, man, but Vlad's so awesome. Like, such right. a good thrower. And, like, defensively, you know, defensive metrics, they really do like Vlad and they don't really like Gary Sheffield. But I don't know if they properly tell the story of Vlad even that much because he was such a dynamic defensive player for so long, too. And he was just a fun mm-hmm. player, too, that, like, part of me, like, I'm a very, you know, big on the numbers and you are as well. But, like, part of it's just like, oh, man, Vlad is just so cool. Like, I just, like,
right.
you know, he's got, like, borderline numbers, but he's so fucking cool that, like, I kind of want to put him in. So I'm worried about Vlad. I'm kind of glad he didn't maybe go in number first, and maybe now we can spend mm-hmm. a year to kind of dig into his numbers a little bit, do a little bit more research and that sort of stuff. I do think somewhere in the next 3 years he's going in, and I won't be upset when he goes in at all. But
I don't think you can make a case to be upset about it. And you know what? Now that I look at his career overall, he aged like you should in an age yeah. in a baseball era where guys were resurrecting careers, putting up career numbers at age 36, age 37 seasons. He has a career arc that you would likely expect from somebody who aged properly yeah. and wasn't chemically aided. And his overall line, 318 batting average, 379 OBP, 553 career slugging, and combined for a 931 OPS, which overall for his career is a 140 OPS plus. Just on that alone, he's in my Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Just on that alone. You know, never mind the peak war or the gray ink, the black ink stuff, which I'm not too high on personally. Rich, I don't know where you stand on the black ink, a gray ink thing. Like, do your Hall of Famers have to be
no, not necessarily
beaters, world beaters?
No, and a lot of that is too. A lot of like the black ink and the gray ink stuff is like the old school, and that's why it was kind of developed, is to look at what voters, not necessarily that guy because his black ink is high deserves to be in, but more that what voters look at. And voters used to look at, well, he led the league in, you know, stolen bases 10 straight years or like 5 years or whatever. Oh, he led the league. And like Vlad doesn't lead the league in a lot of things. Like there's a few smatterings of runs and hits and I think one, you know, total bases or one or two total bases and stuff. So yeah, the black ink is not going to be very good for him. He never led the league in a lot of stuff. But for me,
right,
I don't need
it is
that.
Definitely like, not pitches per plate appearances.
No, that was certainly not one of them. No. But no. I don't care. Like, to me, that doesn't really all matter right. all that much. Like, just accumulate stuff. That's really. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, Vlad is kind of an interesting case. Like you said, the aging curve is fun to look at. And that might be a thing where after a year of kind of looking at him, and maybe it's a thing where you look at peaks more than anything. And I do like that. I think that's one thing that I don't know if people do enough of in Hall of Fame mm-hmm. voting or Hall of Fame discussions. And I guess that's a question I'll maybe pose to you. To you, is having, like, a 7-year, 8-year awesome peak better than being, you know, having a very good peak, but then like hanging around for 5 or 6 more years or whatever. Cause that's the thing with Sheffield. You look at his career war and you're like, well, what the hell? Why is Gary Sheffield not in? And it's like, yeah, but he hung around for like 6 years of just kind of being okay.
Yeah.
Like, should that get extra rewards versus Vlad, who's 7-year peak you could put up against anybody. But like you said, after those 7 years or 7 or 8 years or whatever, I mean, his last 4 years, he was not very good. I mean, he was but he was 33, 34, 35, you know, he was getting to the age where guys get old.
He should have been, yeah.
Which is funny. Ken Griffey Jr. went through that same thing, too. That's always funny when people are like, oh, damn it, Jr. He could have been so good, and then he wasn't. It's like, yeah, he got bad when he was 32. Like, guys get bad. Like, yeah. But people forgot that that's what happened. Like, guys just
not
used
Kenny
to get
Williams.
Bad.
Not Kenny Williams, though.
Yeah.
Not Kenny. He was...
But, like, the Barry Bonds and the Clemens and those sort of guys that just... And even a Randy Johnson and those guys that just... There were so many guys that just got, like, better when they turned 35. That everybody forgot that like, no, when you're 35, you're bad.
35
you're
is
done.
When you get old and bad and
like you're
done.
You
should be out
like
of the league.
You're
yeah.
not in the league anymore, unless you're Nolan Ryan, who's just, you know, he was just an idiot. So he just never went away. Like, so he's like 47. So
you know, you can make a decent case for me for being just very good for a while. Certainly the Hall of Fame is chock full of guys like
Musina,
that.
Musina's
that
a great case
good.
Of that, too. I mean, he's absolutely one of the guys.
Right. But I love greatness. I love you can't get me out, and when I hit the ball, it's going a long way for hitters, or I'm going to get you out and you're not going to be able to hit my stuff for pitchers. For Vlad, I admire the peak more than I do the endurance. Just in terms of as a voter, in terms of aesthetics, in terms of what I like the most, I like the big peak more than I do the sustained performance. I can, because when you talk about sustained performance, you're talking then about the Ichiros of the world, who has done above average for a while. And the question then becomes, do you reward that just as you reward being really, really good for a 5, 6, 7, perhaps 8 year span? I think both should be rewarded, but the question of whether how much to reward one versus the other, I choose the big peak, because that's just what I like to see. That's what I like to see in the box scores. That's what I like to see on TV. That's what I like to see in a guy's career numbers on Baseball Reference or FanGraphs. That's what I like, but I can recognize that there's, you know, there's people that view things other ways and they have different opinions. But Vlad, man, that just... The 7 year peak war for him isn't, it's 42, as I scroll down, try to remember, it's 41.1, and the average right fielder in the Hall of Fame has a 7 year peak of 43, a 7 year peak war of 43. Vlad's overall Hall of War is 59.3, the average Hall of Fame right fielder is 73.2.
See, that's just so my problem with right Vlad. There. He's borderline, and that's why I'm just like, he's so cool, put him in,
Yeah, I think that's, even though he doesn't get there in career war, that peak is right where it should be. His aging curve is right where it should be. And I'm not up on it. How does Baseball Reference's version of wins above replacement handle defense? Are they well regarded for it or not so much?
I don't recall. I mean, I think they change them around and move things around a little bit, but I don't recall exactly what. I think they use, because FanGraphs uses UZR, right? Which one uses UZR? Well, I think the Baseball Reference must use...
I think they use range runs.
Defensive runs saves or that is right. You're right. They range factor or something like that, I think.
Yes. They calculate it purely from box score, whereas UZR is... I don't really know how it's calculated. I want to say it's... is that scout based? Is that report based?
Defensive run saved is, but that I don't know that you can go back and do historical. So they must have another reason, another way to do historical ones. Because defensive run saved is they have a guy that logs it and is like, that guy should have gotten that hit, or that ball went there. They log it like that. They have stringers around every ballpark watching every game, sort of coming back with that sort of stuff. Versus UZR is more of here's your zone. The ball got hit in your zone. Did you catch the ball? Did you do this with the ball? So it'll be interesting to see as we kind of progress a little bit more with the pitch effects and field effects and all those things as well, because now you'll be able to really hone in on that sort of stuff.
Oh, yes. Now, there's one thing that there's a couple things that bother me. I'm fine with Bagwell, Reigns, and Pudge getting in. Hoffman, I'm going to be fine with getting in. Vlad, I think we both came to the consensus. We think he deserves to be a Hall of Famer. It's interesting to me that Curt Schilling got 199 total votes. His percentage of the total vote was 45, which was a precipitous drop from last year when he received about 52% of the vote. So a total 7% drop for Curt Schilling in his fifth year on the ballot, which is something I think people expected him, I would say a couple years ago, maybe not so now, to kind of rise up ballots until an eventual seventh, eighth year on the ballot Hall of Fame induction, just given his career. But that's not what we're seeing. And... do you think it's because of his politics?
I do. I think it's definitely what it is. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't gotten worse. I mean, nothing has happened in his career that he didn't come back and was really horrible. No, I mean, yeah, it's absolutely that. I mean, you look at a guy who, and I usually don't like that, but he's such a gas bag that you know what I mean? If I was a writer and I'm writing it down, I'd be like, he's such a douche though. I can't vote him. But he's so much like your really racist uncle. Not like you have one uncle.
Right, not just
you have one uncle that shares a bunch of things and has. But he's the uncle that has the Hillary for jail as his profile picture and stuff. And you're like, all right, dude. And shares the worst websites ever. You're like, that's not a site, man. It's thinktank.net. Obama kills babies and feasts their blood. It's all right, dude. You got to vet that a little bit more. Try another source. That can't be your only source. ThinkNet.net cannot be the only source for this, Obama eats babies article you just posted all over everyone's wall and said, this is our, like, you know what I mean? Like, good riddance, get out of here. Yeah. Barack Hussein Obama. Like, but that's Kurt Schilling, right, though.
Here's his birth certificate from Kenya. Here it is.
Right. Like,
I found it.
It's on this random website. Who knew it would just be a PDF on this website? Like, but he's not even just the one that's like, oh, you know, I do think that we, like, he's not that one. He's not, like, articulately, like, because then, like, I would be like, no, that's kind of bullshit. Like, the guy should have his opinion and he's allowed it. But I don't, like, I don't know that Kurt Schilling should be, no, like,
he pushes it to the limit. He the turns memes. It up
I
all
can't
the way.
Do the memes, man. If you post memes, you're done. You don't go to my Hall of Fame.
Right, any memes or just memes
no,
you don't
memes,
like?
No. They have to be, no. Memes that are, I have a very specific thing about this. It's the memes that, like, are clearly, and we talked about this before, they're ones that are like, so it got first shared on Instagram. And then someone screenshotted the Instagram post. And then someone screenshotted the screenshot of the Instagram post and then shared that image on Facebook and then like screenshotted that. Because it's like, they're those memes too. Where they're just, you can't read anything.
Filters.
Yeah, there's like 8 filters of Instagram and there's like 7 people's like at names on them. And you're like, what is this? Why is this on? Stop. Garrig38 or whatever the hell. You like. I have a shitty Twitter name too. That's why I'm going to take them out too.
What's it? What?
It's like Garrig38 is his Twitter.
Oh boy. Why?
Oh my God. I went onto his Twitter for 2 seconds and I'm already done. In order.
All right, here we go. I got to do it. Okay, can I search Kurt Schilling Twitter?
Yeah, or just look up twitter.com/Garrig38 and you'll.
Oh God. Is that a Lou Gehrig thing?
I think so. Yeah.
In order to his avatar is in order to insult me, I must first value your opinion. .. Not even he doesn't even do
that's
ellipses.
That's not even the
right
using of ellipse. That's what I mean. It's like you're dumb. You're like
nice
come
try
on.
Though,
Uncle Kurt. Like, come on, you
got
to use.
Oh God, he's got Breitbart.com in his Twitter.
He hosts a show on them. That's what I mean. Like he can't be on. He can't
do that. Oh man.
Like, and Kurt. That's, it's not an opinion thing. You can have your, but you're just a gas bag. Like that's
right. He pushes it so far where I just, if you stopped for like 6 months, Kurt, just stop, just shut up for 6 months. I can get you into the Hall of Fame, but you're just, he's petulant. He's insistent on just being a douche. And
oh my God, this is the greatest. Hold on.
Oh no.
Scroll down a little bit. Scroll down to the second tweet and read everything that's in it.
Is it the one that says, is this the?
Yes.
Okay.
Now read who it's from. So you got to go back. So read the quote tweet first and then read the what.
Oh no. Sydney Ponson on Twitter sends to @Garrig38, congrats on the Hall of Fame. Atta boy, Sydney.
Sydney, big Sydney.
Get you some. I love it. And then this
Sydney
is
sitting down with his bucket of cheese deciding, yeah, you know, fuck her, Chili. I'm going to show it.
So you know what? I'm going to, you know what? Is that actually Sydney Ponson?
Yeah. I mean, Kurt wasn't sure either.
Like, is he new to Twitter? Did he just go to Twitter to mess with Kurt Schilling?
He has very few followers. Yeah, it's a possibility.
Right, he's got 40 tweets. He's following 5 people. He's got 50. I hope it's Sydney Ponson. That'd be great. And Kurt Schilling quoted and said, is this the fat ass underachieving former MLB pitcher who pissed away a potentially Hall of Fame career? Well done. # lazy ass underachiever. Dude, stop being a dick.
Oh my God.
Just
so the location of this Sydney Ponson is not really Sid. So it's definitely not actually Sydney Ponson.
Okay.
But now I got to ask, it's still a great tweet anyway, and I like Kurt Schilling's response a little bit too, but at what point, how do you reconcile your life if you've decided to make a Sydney Ponson parody account? Like, where are you going?
What are you parodying?
Like, where are you going and what are you doing? And the tweets are terrible too. It's just like 864 wings, I'm fat or something. Like, what are you doing with your life, man? Like, really sit down and think about what you're doing with your life at Sydney Ponson. Who's not the really Sydney Ponson.
I hope it was, though. That'd be
great.
But
now it sucks, because now the actual Sydney Ponson is going to read that and be like, Kurt, what's up, man? Like, I didn't do anything.
What did I? And you know what, Kurt? I'm sorry, you're bad at a talent evaluator. He did not have a potential Hall of Fame career. That was not
yeah,
a thing
he was bad,
for Sydney Ponson. He was just bad. He was just kind of, he was he ate a lot of things, including innings and cakes and cheese, but that was his MO. He had I don't think he ever posted a FIP. For one season, he posted a FIP below four. Once.
Well.
Oh, Sydney. Fat white guy. He's only 40 years old. He was born in Aruba. Aged, just turned 40, it looks like. So, man, damn it, it's not the real Sydney Ponzone. Why does Kurt have to be such an ass?
Yeah. He has a great career.
Because he's got the peak, credentials to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Right? His 49-7-year peak WAR is amazing for a pitcher. And he is going to be his career, his what was his 21st, that's what it is. 21st overall among starters in BWAR, in Baseball Reference's wins above replacement. Among all starters in Major League Baseball history, Curt Schilling is 21st in wins above replacement. That should be Hall of Fame. But if you're as so much of a dick that you just, you saying things on Facebook, it's not like he hurt anybody. It's not like he, you know, obstructed a criminal investigation or was dealing drugs or tested positive for anything. He's just that much of an ass bag on social media. Yeah. You know, I'm one of the first people to try to highlight hypocrisy in media and liberal media overreacting to things and getting really upset about something that somebody said or implied and blah, 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 blah. But, and my, I'll be honest, my initial response is to try to want to defend Curt Schilling from people from one is firing from ESPN for having just the wrong political opinion, but, and also his apparent slow blackballing from the Hall of Fame. But he's so out loud and outrageous about it that I just have to say, no, you're deserving of it because you're that much of a douche.
And another thing too is with the ballots being way more public now and people having an idea, like, then now you don't want to be the guy that, you know, because if you vote for Curt Schilling, then you're going to have people going, why the hell did you vote for him? You know what I mean? Like, that's something that could actually happen where people are also thinking, well, geez, I don't want the backlash of voting for this guy and having to explain, it's just baseball, I don't agree with him, or, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, right, too. So it's...
And that's a sad state. That's the sad state of
social
media.
Agree. Yeah, yeah. No, agreed.
Is that you can't even vote for Curt Schilling for the Hall of Fame because, oh my God, you endorse all these things? I mean, people can't hire assistant coaches that worked under Art Briles anymore. Texas had to come out. They hired an assistant coach that worked under Art Briles at Baylor, and they had to come out and release a statement and answer all the criticism they got for hiring a guy who worked under Art Briles. That's the only thing he did. Oh, well, he tweeted something about hashtag believe in Briles or some crap. And they had to come out and answer for it because people were really upset. It's like, it's an assistant football coach, for the love of God. But that's the sad state. But, I mean, Curt Schilling just takes it to a new level. And, you know, he should be in, but does he get in on his last ballot? He's on his fifth.
I don't think so.
Because, you know, I put in the red sheet 4 years.
You know,
right, like, 4 years of Trump. He's got 4 years of Trump.
Yeah, that's gonna hurt him even more. I mean, good God. Like
right, because the things he's going to try to want to say during a Trump presidency are not going to endear himself to Hall of Fame voters. So it's probably only going to get worse. One of the best pitchers in baseball is going to have to be a Veterans Committee inductee.
Right.
Yeah. That's just because he's...
Just chill for, like, until you get elected, and then you can be an ass bag.
Yeah, then just go on Breitbart and say all the things you want, Kurt. Then just do it. Now, Rich, was there anything on this ballot that surprised you that you really didn't like, that you find to be appalling?
I think part of it...
Aside from Maglio Ordonez getting four votes?
That is pretty bad. Yeah, I
thought it was one guy. It was four people.
I have three on ballot.
Three. Well,
that's three. Too many for... I love... Old Olio Maglio, but no, probably not. Edgar Renteria 2. That's
Jason Veritek 2. Those people.
Yeah,
should lose
their
votes.
I like though. I do love like the, because you'll see like JT Snow gets like one vote. It's like, all right, man. Like, it's just some beat writer that was like, yeah, you gave me a good interview, buddy. Like, I'm gonna vote for you. And it's like, all right, well, there's a lot of guys.
Yeah,
that
Tim
need to
Wakefield
get in
got
here.
A vote. Yeah, Tim Wakefield got a vote.
I'd throw a pity vote to Tim Wakefield.
You see, I'm fine with the pity vote. It's just that when you, and maybe the Jason Veritek and Edgar
Renteria
guys,
I'd have to see
their
ballots to really know. Like,
right. Maybe they were both trying to be that guy. Like, okay, I'll throw a pity vote to Jason Veritek. And then it just looks like two idiots voting for Jason Veritek. But I couldn't get, I think you should lose your, if you really honestly voted for Jason Veritek because you're trying to make a point to the BBWAA, I don't.
I think a few other things. Larry Walker still only at 21%. That kind of hurts me because Larry Walker's really good. And I hope that people take some time to kind of look at what he did. And I think he's a guy that's going to really rally in his last few years, maybe similar to Reigns. So it'll be interesting to see Walker. Edgar Martinez, too, like only 58.6. And that guy's a world beater. And it's like what's really fascinating, too. And I think what's good for a lot of people to do is I know people are going to vote David Ortiz when the time comes. Mm-hmm. People are definitely going to vote for David Ortiz. Just blind, do it, copy, paste, whatever. Look at player A, player B of David Ortiz and Edgar Martinez.
Is it that close?
Edgar Martinez blows David Ortiz out of the water. And then even if you're like, well, Edgar Martinez played so many more games not at DH too than Ortiz. Oh. Like, so if you even think about David Ortiz as a Hall of Famer, which I think there's a very good case for David Ortiz, especially with the clutchness and the playoffs and all that sort of stuff. Edgar Martinez has got to go in. You have no choice but not to put Edgar Martinez in. Unless you're so on the idea that, like, oh, what you do in the playoffs matters so much more, which I don't know that I can necessarily blame Edgar Martinez for the Seattle Mariners not, you know. I don't think it, he, look at his numbers. Right, he was doing all he could to get them into the playoffs. Like, he was doing his job.
Didn't have enough, not a good enough
slider. He didn't have Pedro, okay? He had Randy Johnson, but he didn't have Tim Wake. He didn't have Hall of Fame vote getter Tim Wakefield on that rotation either.
Hall of Fame vote getter.
And then the other ones is just Clemens and Bonds, at 54 and 53. I mean, those dudes are getting in, and we talked about that, and I'm okay with that.
All right. I've got one thing that I've got to – we'll close this out on. We'll touch on the NFL playoffs to close out the show. Is that Jorge Posada received only 3.8% of the total vote and is now going to be left off of future Hall of Fame ballots. And I think that's a – I think it's a travesty. Not because I think Jorge Posada is a Hall of Fame catcher, but I think somebody that had – Jorge Posada's career. Jorge Posada is 42.7 baseball reference wins above replacement. That places him, I want to say, 17th. 17th, yes, here it is, of the 104 players of all time who played at least 50% of their games as a catcher while accruing at least 4,000 plate appearances. He had 42.7 wins above replacement, and that places him among 17th among catchers all time who did that. And his peak WAR was 32.7. The average Hall of Fame catcher is 34.2. He has a 37.7 Jaws. Average Hall of Famer, 43.4. But here's my point, is that his career slash line of 273, 374, 474 with a 121 OPS plus, that would get you hanging around the Hall of Fame ballot for like a couple years, don't you think?
Yeah, that's my one. I'm with you. I don't think he is a Hall of Famer, but I think he's a guy that at least merits a little bit. I mean, he's not a Melvin Mora type, and that's where he's at right now. He's basically been regulated or relegated to like the Mike Cameron, Carlos Guillen, Melvin Mora, like those sort of guys, which I don't think is right. I really think that Posada should have gotten something. And I think that the problem though, and this has kind of become an issue, is you have 10 votes. You got only 10 guys you can vote in. There's a huge glut of really good players at the top of those that guys like a Posada who would have hung around 10, 15 years ago, who would have gotten some people to say, oh, yeah, I'll throw Posada on there. Can't put Posada on there because they're like, well, I got to put Barry Bonds in because why is Barry Bonds not in? Why is Roger Clemens not in? Why is Vladimir Guerrero here? There's so many guys hanging around on these ballots because people won't vote for guys that they suspected steroids. That you have this glut of just awesome players. Like, why is Jeff Bagwell still on here? Why was Mike Piazza still on there till last year? Why is Edgar Martinez hanging around? Why is, Clemens, Bonds, and these guys hanging around for so... Like, no, these guys go in. No, I'm at, like, in previous eras, a guy like a Posada, who maybe isn't a Hall of Famer, but does merit a little bit of, let's toss him around a little bit. He doesn't get that because there's just no room on people's ballots. I mean, if you go through this list and you honestly, if I gave you the ballot, I think you'd get to 10 pretty easily, wouldn't you? I know I would.
I think so. I would probably get to. I'd all of a sudden be like, oh my god, I have 10 guys on.
Yeah, well, maybe let's do that. Let's you and I pick our ballots here. This is we have not researched, we have not done anything, but just a kind of a quick and dirty of who you would put on. Just to give you an idea of why Posada would get left off of so many people's ballots.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Are you putting 7. Schilling in? Because I'm going to do it just because.
Yeah, okay, I'm putting Schilling in.
Like, if I was a voter, I probably wouldn't. But for the purposes of this, I'll put Schilling in. Okay.
All right, so Bagwell, Pudge, this is me, first blush, just I'm voting for these guys, no question. Bagwell, Pudge, Vlad, Edgar Martinez, Clemens, Bonds, Schilling, holy crap, I'm already at 7.
Right, that's what I mean.
Larry Walker, 8. Right. Got to throw the crime dog a pity vote, right?
Lance Johnson? No, I'm just joking. Fred McGriff. No, he was one dog. But, that was one dog. Never mind.
Yeah.
You haven't gotten to, okay, you haven't put right. Tim Raines. Just made sure I was, you haven't put Tim Raines in there yet either.
No, I haven't. So Tim Raines would put me in 8. I'll shelve crime dog. Holy crap. Yeah.
You haven't put Hoffman in yet? You talked about you wanted Hoffman.
No, haven't put Hoffman in. Who's still on here?
Orlando
for
Cabrera. Orlando Cabrera. Noted asshole. Yeah. Noted. Hey, put that air on this guy, not me. Orlando Cabrera.
That was not me. That yeah, I did. I could have gotten to. I did not get to that because I couldn't have gotten to it. That wasn't my fault. Yeah, Jeff Kent really doesn't do anything for me. Who gets number? You know what? It's Jorge Posada. He would be my first in, but he's on the outside looking in.
And that's the problem. Right. And that's, I mean, there's such a glut because I have, you know, just looking at mine, I have Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, Bagwell, Mussina, Larry Walker, Edgar, Raines, Ramirez, and Pudge. And I'm leaving out Vlad Guerrero. Like, I don't want to leave out Vlad Guerrero. And like, maybe if you want, okay, maybe take out Mussina and put in Vlad Guerrero. Okay, well, that still doesn't leave any room for Posada. Like, I might put Gary Sheffield in over Posada. So, like, that's the issue, too. And then there's Trevor Hoffman, and Billy Wagner's not bad. Like, he's another one that I really consider. I mean, Billy Wagner had a great-ass career, too. This is my problem is that, you know, Posada does deserve to be on there. Posada does not deserve to be gone right now, but they've kind of made their own bed, Hall of Fame voters. These guys shouldn't
with
be.
The 10.
Bonds and Clemens should not be in there. Why are they still hanging around? You take those two out, you got two more votes.
Right, if Bonds and Clemens are already in the Hall of Fame.
They're in their fifth year. What the hell are we doing?
And why did it take you 7 years to put in Jeff Bagwell? Why did it take you 10 years to put in Tim Raines? Why is Edgar Martinez now on his 8th ballot?
Right. Well, what was Piazza was 4 or 5 maybe, I think, as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe it was. I have it pulled up here. I should, from Baseball Reference. Piazza was on his 4th. Piazza was on his 4th.
And there was no reason for that either. Like, come on.
No.
So this is the problem. It's just like you got this glut of talent. And that could be just a byproduct of the era as well, that there was a lot of talented players in this era. But I think it's more of a byproduct of those. I mean, there's elite, all-time great players that are still on the list. So any, like, smart voter, you know, is going to put those guys on the list, and that's less space. So you get a Posada who deserves more merit, who doesn't, because there's just no space. Like, there's not an honorable mention section. And you know, like, don't take this guy off yet. Like, let's because you're right.
Like, no, let's keep him around. Let's keep him around. And
something that was kind of tossed around my head, and then we can kind of close out this segment, is it's interesting to look at those Yankees teams. I mean, that was the team of the 90s, the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Who do they have Hall of Fame wise? Like, you think of these great franchises and these great powerhouse teams, and like, they're littered with Hall of Famers. That Yankees team, man. Bernie's not there.
When did they first win it? Was that 96?
96, correct, yeah.
Okay.
Tim Raines is on the team, so they got one more, but I don't know if I count it.
Catcher Joe Girardi, Tino Martinez, first base. Mariano Duncan was their second baseman. Derek Jeter, Wade Boggs. Gerald Williams, Bernie Williams, Paul O'Neill.
I'm not giving him Wade Boggs. I'm not giving the 96 Yankees Wade Boggs, unfortunately. Sorry. Sorry, Wade. I'm not counting that as the...
And Ruben Sierra was their DH, rotation of Andy Pettit. Oh my God, a young ass Andy Pettit. Kenny Rogers, Dwight Gooden, Jimmy Key, David Cone. I loved me some David Cone. And Ramiro Mendoza.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go to like the 2000 Yankees. Like, that's like in the midst of like that, you know, because that's kind of the older guard. Of
right,
them.
Right, right. Yeah.
Let's do 98. Okay, they won 114 games that year. That's pretty good team.
So that's pretty good. That's all right.
Yeah. So you got Posada, no. Tino Martinez, no. Chuck Knobloch, no. Derek Jeter, yes. He'll be in.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Brosius, no. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if he's probably eligible. I think Scott Brosius probably already fell off the ballot. But Ched Curtis, Bernie Williams, Paul O'Neill, Daryl Strawberry.
Okay.
Tim Raines. So they got Tim Raines. But I don't know. Again, I don't know that I'm counting Tim Raines all the way. But then you got Andy Pettit, David Wells, David Cone, Hideki Arabu, and El Duque. was like one Hall of Fame, you know what I mean? Like one of their legit all-around players, and they went 100. It's like a dynasty, and like it's Jeter.
Yeah, that was that was a freaking team, man. That was insane to rattle off just three World Series right in a row, like they did. That's incredible, and to do it, the Jeter was a homegrown kid, wasn't he? Yeah. So was Bernie Williams and Andy Pettit and Jorge Posada. They were all acquired before they made it professionally, if I remember correctly. It was only later that they got the reputation for
that team was free agent acquisition. Yeah, that team was built on like up and coming guys, like a Paul O'Neill too. Tino Martinez is what I meant to say. Oh no, Tino played for Seattle, right? Was he at Seattle before? Yeah, I think he was. No, never mind. He was Seattle before, of course. Yeah, he went to Seattle, and then he went to New York.
Right.
But, the guy like a Bernie Williams, yeah, absolutely. Jeter, Posada, and then, yeah, you go up and down. I mean, a lot of the bench and a lot of the bullpen, too, were all guys that were kind of – but I just thought it was funny when you kind of look at the team, and now that they're all kind of gone and a lot of those guys went, you know, through, it's like, well, Derek Jeter is, like, the only, you know, everyday player that's a Hall of Famer on that team. And it's like, huh, okay, like –
yeah,
isn't that weird? Like that is
weird because you think of, you know, a great team, a dynasty team, and then you look back and you realize, wow, only one of those guys is going to be. I mean, obviously they're all going to be remembered. They're the data is always going to be there, but only one of those guys has technically earned enshrinement in the Hall of Fame. It's an odd concept to grasp. Like, how can one of the greatest teams of all time not only have one guy worthy of that? Oh God, Curt Schilling has a new tweet.
Oh Lord.
Oh no, it was just I remember that guy.
But yeah, because I was looking up like the big run machine, the Cincinnati Reds of the 70s or whatever. They have three. They have Bench, Perez, and Morgan, and of course would have, you know, Pete Rose if
would,
he wasn't.
Would have four.
If it wasn't Pete Rose, and their manager, you know, Sparky Anderson was as well.
Jeez.
And that's, so, you know, three of their everyday players were there. So it's just like, but
has this been a golden age of baseball where just everybody's so damn good that it's raised the watermark, the tide of everybody else, that today's great players are so truly and honestly great, they are world beaters over guys that were truly and honestly great in their own day? Do you think that's part of it?
Yeah, that's
like the average guy is probably a little bit better than the average guy 10, 20, 30 years ago. And so now you've got this, like you said, you've got a logjam of guys who are by most standards, by old school standards, really, really, really good, but that barrier to Hall of Fame worthy is moving now because there's so many good guys. Because if they were all to be Hall of Famers, then Hall of Fame means a little bit less, right? I don't know. That's an interesting.
I like that. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
Ponder. Yes. I'm scratching maybe chin a little. Yeah.
Hmm. Need to think about this a little bit. Exercise my mind grapes. Write a book, yeah, just based purely on baseball reference. That's on the, like, researching this show, going to baseball reference, you know, like that write-up I did of Jorge Posada, just researching all that, going to the play index on baseball reference, that's so much fun to me. That would be awesome to be able to write a book.
So I have some unfortunate stuff. News, and then you can go to the break. But Jeff Bagwell's baseball reference page, you know how they have, like, the nicknames for people? Buff is not one of them, which is wrong. Unfortunately, Baggy and Bagpipes.
What?
I don't remember any of those.
No.
Maybe Baggy. Nobody called him Bagpipes. Who called him Bagpipes? Which is a pretty cool name if Pipes is in like the giant muscles connotation.
Right.
I like that, but I don't remember anybody calling him.
I surely remember Buff Bagwell, though. That was a thing, wasn't it?
I don't know. I think maybe just between us. Or maybe you because you were a baseball, or like a wrestling fan. I don't know that if you said Buff Bagwell in like public, people would...
Right, you wouldn't.
I don't know. Maybe we'll have to have send out to our listeners. Was Buff Bagwell? Like,
yeah, we'll have Jeff Bagwell on and see. Like, were you a fan of wrestling? Would you have been okay if somebody called you Buff Bagwell because you shared a surname or with a wrestler?
I feel like he would. He looks like a wrestling fan, right?
Oh yeah,
Buff Daddy.
Yeah, he's gotta be. All right, Rich. Let's quick close out the NFL playoffs. It's going to be coming up here. We were treated to finally great NFL games this past weekend. And Rich, what was your favorite? For me, I got to say, I think I know which one you like.
The game with all the field goals. That one was my favorite.
No, yeah. You'd like that one? Where six field goals won it?
Yes, get down to the red zone. Don't score a field goal. Hell yeah. Let's do this. Yes, 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 yes. Like, that was the worst. They got to the red zone. Yeah, the Steelers Chiefs. I mean, it was a fun game because it was close, but like aesthetically, it was not fun at all. It was like, no. And it wasn't because of the ice or the, because that was the worry is, and you texted me before the games and said, oh, this one, you know, we were talking about Packers Cowboys, which is of course my pick and your pick. And no, everybody yeah, in the universe's well. Pick if you watched, yeah. you know, any of those games. But you texted me and said, well, that was a fun game. This one's not going to be, it's going to be a mess because of the snow and the ice and all that. And that wasn't the problem. It was just like nobody could score. Nobody could get any offense going. And it was still 18-16, which is higher scoring than what I would consider a game that had no offense. But it was the most boring offense ever. The Steelers would get to the 10 and then just be like, well, we don't know what to do. And they just kicked, they scored all on field goals. That's terrible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, Travis Kelce is getting stupid penalties and setting
his
team.
What are you doing, Chief? Like, literally, what are you doing, Chief? Like, what, come on.
That guy's an idiot. That guy is.
He was screaming after the game too. What was he screaming at?
Oh, he was screaming about referees.
That's what it was. Yeah, like
that guy. You shouldn't have. I mean, he did have a pretty good burn on the referee.
Yeah,
that was a hold. Okay, you can't wrap your arm around the defensive end and take him to the ground. That's a hold.
But it's James Harrison, and he's on so many weird things that I feel like you should be able to hold him. Because you don't know, because he's kind of robotic. Like, he's not actually a human being at this point. Right. Because he's like 72 years old, but has the body of a 21 year old.
36 damn years old. And he's.
Because he just goes to weird countries and gets. He's like, well, it's legal here, so I'll just do it. Like, like, how is that man passed drug test? Like, more power to him. I appreciate the hustle of James Harrison because you know that guy's got like the weirdest stuff in his body. Mm-hmm. Like, he goes to Belize to get like. Scorpion injections or something, you know what I mean? Like, but it doesn't matter.
Right, they're implanting scorpion glands.
Right,
into
but he's like, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, but everybody should do that because if you look like James Harrison when you're 38 or 36 or whatever, go for it.
Yeah, you're doing that on an NFL field. At,
isn't
at
he the oldest
old
defensive player in the league?
Yeah,
but he's like still good. Mm-hmm. Great. Like,
he's still very good.
He's like faster than you. Like this, that guy was like mid-20s and it was like, oh my god, he had a hold.
Oh
James
god,
Harrison
he beat me again,
it.
Son right. of a. Bitch. Yeah, and he doesn't like his kid getting participation trophies if you follow him on Twitter. Remember that? Which is so great. He's such a football-y football guy that he's going to take his kid's trophy like, you did not earn this. That's so badass. I mean, the kid's probably going to have emotional issues as he grows up, but still, that's pretty cool.
That's a topic for another episode, the people that get upset about participation trophies.
Oh yeah. Well,
I don't care one way or another. Like if you get a trophy for your little kid and the kid wants it, whatever. Like who cares? Like
yeah.
I don't think it's really this dramatic thing that we have to really make a big deal about. It's like whatever.
No,
you know?
No. But he was
just throws it in the corner and goes,
the kid knows what is winning and losing. Right. The kid knows what winning and losing is.
Like this idea that if you give them a trophy, they're like, I won. Like they know. They know the score. Yep. They know Matt. They know that they lost.
But Travis Kelce, he had a pretty sick burn. He said he shouldn't, that referee shouldn't be allowed to wear a zebra shirt, not even at Foot Locker.
Oh, that was true. I'll give him props for that. That was pretty sweet. Okay,
that was pretty good. Yeah. That was pretty good. But you know what you can't do? You can't shove a defensive player to the ground after he, you know, gives you a little shove.
I feel like you can. Are you sure you can't?
No, are you sure it's a penalty? You can't. After the play, you can't.
How do you know it's a penalty?
Because it got flagged.
Oh, that's one way. But, you know, but the NFL, you never really know what's what anymore.
No, you don't.
That's definitely a catch. That's a catch. The ruling on the field stands. It is not a catch.
That was Packers Cowboys, where we almost had another what is and is not a catch moment. Wasn't it? Where it was going to, the guy was going to the ground and, that's what it was. It was when, it was Dez. Dez caught a ball from Dak, and as he was falling out of bounds, he hit like a photographer with the ball, and the ball like flubbed out of his hands, and then they were wondering like, well, is that a catch? Because he had it, he caught it, put 2 feet in bounds, ran out of bounds, was falling to the ground, and then his hand hit a reporter and the ball fell out of his hands, and people were like, well, it may not be a catch. As if that's not a catch, I'm done watching football. But Thankfully, cooler heads prevailed, and they called it a catch. But that was fun football, at least on Sunday afternoon, yeah. Not Sunday night. Not
no,
really
yeah,
that
but
that was a tremendous.
It was a
game.
Great game, and I'm somebody who less and less enjoys watching football ever because like I pretty much the first like you know touchdown commercial, kickoff commercial, play commercial, timeout commercial. You know what I mean? Like that thing where there's right. like seven commercial breaks in the span of like 2 minutes. I'm like, okay, this is really. And then like everyone's standing around looking at a monitor while they review a play like that or like
yeah
because there's the play. Touchdown commercial, you know, challenge commercial, back from the challenge commercial. Yeah. Like, I'm like, okay, I can't. But that game was like, I was enthralled with that game. Because you, how could you not be? Like, that's no, classic. That's what people want when they watch a football game. They like mm-hmm. back and forth action, kind of high paced. There wasn't really much downtime either. That's the thing that's really getting me with as far as, and it's happened in the NBA too, with so many of these reviews, and you just have this weird lull of downtime. Of like, let's review this. Let's find out if it's real. Let's find out if this catch was accurate. Let's find out if he did cross the goal line. Let's find out right. if the ball went through the net. And it's like, all right, we know, like, it's fine. Like, we got it. Just play the game. Like,
right. We'll stipulate. Okay. Please, for the love of God, just,
yeah,
it's okay. If you get it wrong, just, I want to watch action.
But this one was just like, boom, boom, boom. And like those final 2 minutes was like, all right, Cowboys score, Packers get on the field, Packers score, Cowboys get on the field, they score, they answer. And it was just like, yes. Like this, that's what we want. Like that's classic.
What I really enjoyed was the narrative of the game where you got for the first half, that was, I think the first quarter it was an even matchup, but then for the second quarter through halftime, that was Packers.
Oh, I sent you a text. I sent a text that said, well, this is over. Packers win.
Yep, there it is. It's done. But then the third quarter was the comeback, and then the fourth quarter was all trading blows, trading haymakers, all the way up until the final whistle, especially, like you said, in those last 2 minutes. And it was incredibly exciting, and it was even made even better by the knowledge after the game that Aaron Rodgers just drew up the play, the final play that got them into field goal range. That's incredible. That's one of the things I love about sports, is that when you hear fun stuff like that, that Aaron Rodgers just went out into the huddle and said, hey, you know what, you go here, you do that, I'm gonna roll out this way, and let's see if it works. Okay, ready, break. And then it works, and we have a cinematic moment. You get to line up for an expiring field goal that will either, if you miss it, the game's not over, we're going to overtime, but if you make it, the game's over. It was perfectly set up. I can't imagine a better way for a game to end, for, you know, at least for somebody that doesn't have a rooting interest in either team. It was fantastic, and are the Packers your pick? Do you want the Packers? I kind of want the Packers to continue winning. Is that bad?
No, I like them too. I've never really.
Is it bad to dislike Aaron or to like Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, no, I like him. I mean, especially like when you watch, he's one of the rare, like, you know, we talk about a lot of the quarterbacks in football now. A lot of them are getting older and older and older, and you know, a lot of them are on their last legs or retiring. I mean, it's kind of funny. This you know, Final Four is all like older, you know, other than Rodgers, a lot of mm-hmm. older quarterbacks. But Matt Ryan, I guess you could put in that too. But Rodgers is one of those guys that still, he's got a lot more years left to go. I mean, we were all kind of worried week four. It's like, oh, geez, well, that's the end of Aaron Rodgers. Like, uh-huh. he's done, he's over. And then we kind of find that there's some other stuff going on in his life. And once you kind of get rid of that and we realize, geez, these guys aren't robots, like that is a thing. Like real life stuff does affect these guys. You know, once he's kind of let that go and just been able to play, you realize again, like, oh my God, this is an all-time great that we're watching here. And mm-hmm. I've always been that way with sports. Like, I don't care if he plays for the Packers. I don't care if he plays for my rival or whatever. I'm not going to ignore greatness. I want to watch greatness. I want to see somebody that's great
right.
be great. You know, I don't care what jersey they wear. I want right. to be able to say, I saw that guy. I was able to say that I saw one of the best throws and best catches I've ever seen in my life on that Sunday game. That pass to Jared Cook, that huge play. You know, like you're talking about that last play. Rodgers is running laterally. How do you throw like 30 yards on a line?
That's what he does.
And get it within a pencil. I mean, if you see where that defender was, where the Cowboys defender, I forgot who it was exactly, he's right there. But Rodgers found an inch of space to pass it to get it to Cook, who was able to just get enough feet in there to make it a legal catch and then get out of bounds immediately. And Rodgers laterally throws that. How do you do that? Yeah.
I have no idea.
That's awesome. How do you not root for that? How do you not root for a guy that can do that?
And the play before, he got knocked down and had the presence of mind to call timeout to stop the clock because he knew that, oh crap, you know, all right, I've got two timeouts. So if I get sacked here, I can, or, you know, if the play ends up in bounds, we have to call timeout to stop the clock so that we can try one more play to get into field goal range. Well, he got sacked. He got knocked on his ass, and he still had the presence of mind to go, oh, timeout. We need one more play, and that was the play that he drew up. It was absolutely incredible, and it was still incredible to watch the Cowboys with their rookie tandem doing big things. You had Zeke Elliott doing Zeke Elliott things. You had Dak Prescott leading the Cowboys back in the divisional round of the playoffs. The directors were cutting to Tony Romo, you know, they were trying to get, and to Joe Buck's credit, I did not hear him take the bait. During that whole, when Dak threw, I believe it was, he threw two picks, right? Was that two? I want to say.
Dak?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was two.
I believe it was around the second interception, the director started to cut to Tony Romo a little bit more.
I hate trying to
drum up?
Yeah, like, come on.
But it's Tony Romo,
who's got,
credit,
like, streaked. He's wearing, like, jeans. He's like, oh, I hope I don't go in. Like, I'm not ready at all. Like,
guys, I am already drunk, okay?
you're riding and dying with Dag. I'm not going in, so.
No, but to Joe Buck's credit, he didn't take the bait. And Dak was allowed to ride it out, and Jerry Jones now has some decisions to make about where to trade Tony Romo. And I hope the Bears are not the destination. But, you know, it was on all fronts. It was an engaging matchup, and it was an engaging game. I don't know if we're going to – I think we're in for fireworks in the NFC Conference Championship between, obviously, Atlanta and the Packers. Matty Ice is helming one of the most potent offenses in the NFL, and news just broke today that that Kyle Shanahan is going to be the Niners are thinking to offer him their head coaching gig, but
they still have those crazy owners that are Jed York.
Which are the Niners?
Yeah, it's Jed York and what's the other guy?
Yes,
yeah.
Jed York. He just cleaned house. Just to
except for him,
everybody
except for me. Everybody's got to go. All you don't know what you're doing. I'm staying though.
I'm saying though, well, it's his toy.
I know. That's owners.
But. He built the brand new stadium 60 miles from San Francisco. If you're a Bay Area football fan,
oh, that stadium is so far away. I went to go drive when we were in San Francisco. I just wanted to kind of. We were somewhere in that area of Santa Clara Santa Clara, right? That's the town it's in. And I was like, let me see where they're building this thing or whatever. And I was like, oh my god, this is so far away. Like who? What market are you trying to get to with this thing?
And I didn't know Gillette Stadium was so damn far away from Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like an hour drive away from Boston in good traffic conditions. I was like, well, I didn't know it was that far. But, you know, the Chargers are leaving San Diego. It's an odd time for California football.
California right? sports, because, yeah, people are looking at it and going, hey, look, we got, you know, budget crisis and all those sort of things. Do we really want to be,
paying for a brand new stadium?
Yeah, $600 million for a new stadium for a private company that's going to, you know, inherit all the profits and we're going to take all the losses? I don't know. Maybe we don't. And that's San Diego. Yeah. The city of San Diego said, you know what? No, fuck you. Bye.
Like, good. Good on them.
It's going to take every city to just go, you know what? No, it's not. Because you don't have to put the power back. These teams will, you know, if it's a big city, the team's not going to go away. You know,
or if they do for a short time, another team is going to come because you have power because you have people.
Yeah, exactly.
You have people to whom
cash in hand,
people that will show up. Yeah, people will show up to pay for parking and pay for beer and pay for brats and pay for the tickets. And then you also have people who will become fans of the team locally and watch all the games on television, and those people will be advertised to. It's time that local municipalities understand, hey, we have all these people. The NFL guys, they have their money and all that, but our commodity is our citizenship, our people that live here. And if you want to go away, fine. We are still whatever. I think San Diego is like a top 15 media market, I want to say. Fine, go away. We're still a top 15 media market. Somebody's going to come here to put on their little show to entertain our people, and we're fine with it. And good on them. You know what? Oakland's going to be staring down the barrel of Mark Davis wanting to move to Las Vegas. That's not official, but reports are that he really wants to move the team to Vegas. And they're going to have the balls to say, no, we are not giving you more money for a stadium.
Yeah.
We're not going to do it. But
yeah, and Seattle was one of the first ones to really kind of get out there and do it with the Sonics. And now, you know, there's talks that they'll eventually, you know, get another team, and a lot of it's going to come from, you know, private money or whatever, which is, it was good. They won, you know, Seattle. Yep. Seattle won. Seattle said, no, if you guys are going to take all the profits, no, we're not going to pay for it. Like,
yeah,
unless you want to do a revenue share deal where we, you know, we get the money back too. Then yeah. Okay. Like,
no, yeah. But you want us to build you a stadium that we will then, that we will technically own, that you will lease from us at no cost, and you will be able to do everything.
I love the idea that you own. So like, if you just strolled up to a stadium that you pay taxes for, like you can just be let in. Like, I just want to play at the United Center, you know?
Yep.
You just knock on the door. Yeah, well, no, I'm a taxpayer, so I get to, you know, go play on the court, right? Like, no.
Well, no, but...
But it's basically the same as a public park, right? Well, yeah, but it's not. Yep.
The Illinois Sports Authority owns, well, now it's Guaranteed Rate Field.
Yeah,
no. U.S. Sports Authority.
So if you want to go throw the ball around, John, we can just walk up there and go, hey, you know.
Yeah, do some long toss in the outfield, you know. I'm sure that...
Why would they let us in? It's just a park, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a publicly owned park.
Soldier Field,
I pay taxes
Field, right?
in the state of Illinois.
Soldier Field's mm-hmm. the same way. That's a park district. The park district literally owns, like, that of all places you could just roll up to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
No, wait, no, you can't, because it's they try to bill it as like, oh, well, you can hold concerts there too. Oh, never mind. We're just going to do, maybe once in a while we'll hold a soccer event or a rugby tournament or something.
Well, the All Blacks, yeah, let the All Blacks come in.
Yeah,
I made the mistake of, I guess not the mistake, but I was in Chicago once, one of those rugby games was going on. That was a weird crowd, man. I was just like, who are all you? Like, where'd you
the
come
rugby,
from?
The American rugby
no,
crowd?
No, like it was half American rugby crowd. And then there was just like people that like, and you could tell they came from wherever.
From New Zealand?
Yeah, they were all over the place. It was just a takeover of New Zealand. I was like, what is going on here? Like,
well, that's cool.
I love that idea. It's like, no, you know what? Yeah, let's go to Chicago and watch some fucking rugby. Like, that's kind of cool. Like,
you know what? Travel well.
Yeah.
They travel, don't they say that about colleges? Well, their fans travel well. How's that to follow a team? You got to buy tickets from New Zealand to Chicago,
right,
Illinois.
Like a 19-hour flight.
Right.
To go watch some rugby, but that's pretty
then
cool.
Then drink crappy, well, I don't think New Zealand beer is probably any good anyway, but then you get crappy light American beer served at the
what is New Zealand
at the
beer?
Venue.
They don't drink Foster's. It's Australian. So what are they?
Yeah, but they got to have their own version
yeah,
of
what
Foster's. All right. Well, Rich looks it up. I'll put the dressing on this show. We thank you for watching.
Emerson's. That's, yeah. I don't know what that is. But there you go.
All right.
The beer looks pretty listening. Good. Sorry. I apologize, New Zealand. The beer looks pretty good.
Oh, all right. You know what? We're gonna have to secure a case of it then. We got
to
test
just go
it
to
for
New
ourselves
Zealand to watch sometime when the NBA
remote show.
Yeah, when the NBA goes to New Zealand, we'll go and.
All right, I'm down.
The expansion team. They're going to build a team in Mexico and New Zealand. So
yeah. All right, we thank you for listening. Thank you for following on Twitter. Follow the show at KANDP Show. You can follow Rich's Wrestling Fanatics at Voices Wrestling on Twitter. You can follow me at John's Voices. This show has been brought to you by VoicesOfWrestling.com/Amazon. Go there now. Bookmark the click-through link. Every time you buy something on Amazon, you will be helping out the KMP Show as well as the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For Rich Krejci, I'm John Playtech. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time. We are out. Bye.